This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from Norfolk, Virginia, the site of the largest naval base in the world, and so much history is here. 144 miles of shoreline, which also includes, of course, the Chesapeake Bay. I'm joined by somebody who knows everything you ever wanted to know about Norfolk, Virginia, and her name is Peggy McPhillips. I love your title. You are the Norfolk City Historian.
I am the Norfolk City Historian. As my husband would say, that's her real job.
Well, other than certain things that I know about, like you having the largest naval base in the world, there are other things as well.
There are many other things, but speaking of the naval base, I think they all revolve around our water. We're almost surrounded by water. We're cut through by water. We were founded.
Rivers, lakes, bays.
Creeks.
Can't forget that. Say it again. Cricks.
We were founded in the 17th century because of our harbor, our natural, deep, ice-free harbor. We were founded on a little strip of land of 50 acres, almost completely surrounded by water. And that brought in trade, our navy, wonderful, wonderful fresh seafood. We had several disasters through the years, and the port and its economy brought us back to stability. We were burned to the ground at the beginning of the Revolutionary War. We had a terrible fire in 1922 in our Berkeley neighborhood that destroyed most of the houses there and caused a massive leaving of Berkeley. There was a waterfront fire in 1931. We had a yellow fever epidemic in 1855 where about 2,000 people died within a period of about 90 days. Then we were occupied by the Federal Army during the Civil War.
You mean those Union guys?
Those guys from the North came down, those Yankees, and they occupied us for 4 years. Our economy and our infrastructure were just a mess after that. And every time we looked to the water and we saw commerce coming in, commerce going out, and those wonderful, wonderful loads of coal leaving and going all over the world after the 1880s, coal came to Norfolk. And
you know, it's interesting when you talk about coal because we've done this show many times from Wales. And Wales was the coal capital of Europe. And in fact, there were coal barons. And it was like the Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. of coal. And then about 1968, when the British government ruled no more coal mines, they had to reinvent themselves.
Oh, my goodness. And I guess they did.
Just like you guys will, you know, right. in terms of figuring out. And in both cases, the answer was the water.
Exactly. It's the whole story of Norfolk is the water. I could tie it into just about everything. The Jamestown Exposition in 1907, that was because we were on Sewell's Point, and it was a great location for people, many of whom traveled by water in those days.
You know, after 9/11, the travel industry was in terrible shape. Nobody was flying, which meant nobody's going to hotels. Everybody was staying home. The only industry that was able to adapt was the cruise line industry because they could literally physically move their assets.
Mm-hmm.
And they started repositioning their ships to U.S. ports that didn't even know they had cruise ship ports, Norfolk being one of them.
Norfolk was very like that, even farther back than that. We had our first Operation Sail in 1976. It was an anniversary. The tall ships
came
in. Sure. We had no real beautiful waterfront at the time. We'd been a working waterfront, and the ships had left downtown, and it was just parking lots and rubble. And we found a berth over at NOAA for a couple of ships to come in, and people were just amazed. All of the citizens who went down, they liked the ships. And that was really the start of the rebirth of our downtown waterfront, which today is beautiful.
And are you getting cruise ships coming in now?
We are getting cruise ships coming in now. We sure are. And that's wonderful to see all these tourists walking around downtown and being interested in our shopping mall and all of the restaurants on our main downtown drag, Granby Street.
But when people come and you get a chance to talk to them, what's the biggest surprise that you have for them about the history of Norfolk that they had absolutely no idea?
Well, a lot of the people had heard Norfolk's reputation, which wasn't all that great, going back to World War II, and they are amazed that it's so modern, so easy to get around in.
What was the reputation?
Well, during World War II, the Navy was very different then. We had,
The MPs were busy.
They were busy. We had a huge influx of people coming in. We had a very colorful East Main Street with tattoo parlors and honky-tonks, and the MPs were busy. And Norfolk was not as welcoming of the Navy as we are now, so it was known as a very unfriendly place with not a lot to do. Boy, is that
feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Talking to Peggy McPhillips, the Norfolk City historian. I remember, Peggy, when I first came to Norfolk in the 70s, it was a tough place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are places you just wouldn't go, right?
That's right.
And especially on the waterfront, too.
Mm-hmm.
What turned it around?
It must have been a combination of things. I think a critical mass may have been part of it.
Because the Navy's always been here.
The Navy's always been here.
Are there still tattoo parlors here?
There are tattoo parlors here again. They went away and they came back a couple of years ago. No pain, no stain is the motto of one of them.
Okay.
So they are back, but they're very, very different now. We don't have the colorful East Main Street. Instead of being tattoo parlors and peep shows and things like that, there's the financial district today. Beautiful brand new hotels, one that just opened a couple of weeks ago, the Main on Main Street. We have the beautiful new library that just opened 2 years ago that's a major draw for people.
Please tell me people go to the library
still. People go to the library. Oh my gosh, they do. Our main library was taken down in 2009 for our new light rail station downtown. But the city decided to buy a little building for us that was built in 1900. And 2 years ago, a six-story wing of the building was added with the most amazing technology. We still have books, oh yes, and we also have books which you can get on Kindle or download. We have a lot of things for young people. Pixel Fest was just a couple of weekends ago, and they were just kids doing games and dressed strangely to me, but having the best time. So people still come to libraries, absolutely.
And you're about to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Navy being
here. We are celebrating the 100th anniversary of Naval Station Norfolk, the greatest naval station in the world, and we're doing a lot with the Navy. The Navy does a lot for us. I mean, it's not just having them here and boosting the economy, but they live in our communities, the naval personnel and their families. They coach little league teams. They serve on boards and commissions. They sit in front of us in church. So they really are in the community, and I think it has enriched us so much.
When people come to Norfolk, friends of yours, for example, who maybe never been here before, what's the one thing you show them they go, I had no idea? What's the biggest surprise to them?
I think probably the biggest surprise for a lot of people, especially people who may live a little bit inland, is the waterfront. All of the activities that we have on the downtown waterfront with fest events in the summertime, and just people, you can stroll around, you can take a dinner cruise on the water, and a lot of people are not used to using the water in that way. It's not the utilitarian waterfront anymore. It's a little bit of a thrill, an extra.
Well, you have the Waterside District about to open up.
Oh, that's exciting.
But before that happens, where do you go hang out? Where's a local dive for you for breakfast, lunch, or dinner that's not in the brochure, not in the guidebook, that you would take me to?
For breakfast, I would take you right around the corner from the library to a little place called The Egg.
Yeah.
It is run by a young man named Philip Decker, whose father, the late Pete Decker, was a very, very popular and beloved attorney here. And Philip opened The Egg, and they serve breakfast and lunch. They serve breakfast all day. I would definitely take you there. It's just off the beaten track enough, and it's one of a kind.
All right, so that's breakfast. Where are we going for lunch?
Oh, let's see. We don't want to go back there for lunch, do we?
No.
I think for lunch, I might take you to the Cuisine and Company Cafe in Slover Library.
In the library?
In the library, yeah. We have our own cafe. Oh, that's so nice, having the library cafe right there. They have wonderful food. They are the same company that has the restaurant in the Chrysler Museum. And I think that would be my choice for lunch.
Okay, now surprise me for dinner.
For dinner, I knew you were going to ask me about dinner.
But well, I want a place that only you know, that's not in the guidebook or the brochures, that you like to hang out at.
Let's see.
Uh-huh. She's pausing. She's thinking.
I'll tell you where we like to hang out. And This is very, very casual. But
that's what we want.
We happen to have a couple of universities here. Old Dominion University. They have a little section, a row of shops where their bookstore and so forth, called Monarch Way, because ODU is the monarchs, get it? And there's a place called Mojo Bones. It's a college hangout, but they have wonderful hamburgers. And my husband and I went there for the first time a couple of summers ago when the power went out at home, and we wanted a cold beer in the worst way. And we went there, and we've been going back ever since. And it's fun because you have all of the college students there, and a lot of locals go in there too. And it's totally off the beaten track.
So now you go there even when the power doesn't go.
We do.
I'm just double checking that you go. Right, that's where you go.
Right, we do.
Mojo Bones.
Mojo Bones, yeah.
And I like the way you say it.
Oh, it's great. It's wonderful.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
Most of you may know of Norfolk on the Chesapeake Bay. You may know it's in Virginia. I'm going to give you that. What you don't know, it's also the home of the largest naval base in the world. And if you're a boat nut like I am, you can't stay away from it. And joining me now, I mean, talk about a place to visit. The commanding officer of the Norfolk Naval Station, Captain Richard McDaniel. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I mean, how big is it?
It's big. I mean, land-wise, 6,200 acres. But our ships, we have 56 combatants.
That are based here.
Based here. So five carriers.
Plus repair base.
That's correct. So repair facilities. We have 19 squadrons. And we have.
And you have carrier groups?
We do. We do. So the five carriers we hear and all the support ships that go with the carriers. And we have 19 squadrons, and then we have 8,400-foot runway. We can accommodate any type of aircraft you want, and have very large tenant commands on board that really support the fleet and get it ready to deploy.
So if you're flying a plane off a carrier, he can come land right here?
He could.
And he does?
He does.
Oh, wow.
All the time.
Well, I have to say that I've had a chance to fly a lot of the airplanes in the fleet, or in the repertoire, as you say. And the one thing I've never had a chance to do, and you know, you couldn't put me on a roller coaster. I'm sorry. You could not. An elevator drops, I get crazy. But you put me in a jet, I can handle it, right? The one thing I've always wanted to do, which is the craziest thing, is three words: night carrier landing.
Well, Norfolk's the right place for you then. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, the Navy could probably get something set up for you. It's
tough.
It's incredible
it's
what
crazy.
These guys do.
It's amazing. Many, many years ago, when I had done a movie called Red Flag for CBS, and the Navy came to me and they said, hey, would you like to do something with us? I said, I would love to do something with you. And I told them what I wanted to do, and they said, you're nuts, you're crazy, it'll never happen. And I said, well, if it were to happen, who could I ask permission for? I said, well, it's the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific. It's SINCPAC, the admiral there. I said, well, can I go see him? I said, well, he's just going to say no. I said, well, can I go anyway? They said, okay. So they made an appointment for me to Pearl Harbor. I went out there to see him. And 15 minutes later, he did the unthinkable. He said yes. And I became the first person given a top security clearance to go on an attack nuclear sub on a classified mission.
Oh, wow.
And I still, obviously, you and I could probably talk off camera, but we went out there. I still can't tell anybody what we did, but that resulted in the Navy agreeing to do a little movie called Hunt for Red October.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How about that?
So I was down there. We saw I experienced the crazy Ivan. I experienced all that stuff because it happened on our trip.
Wow.
Amazing. So any chance I get to go visit the Navy, and for my listeners here, if you get a chance, come visit the Navy base, right? You can do it.
That's correct. And we do tours daily. We start at 9.
Not just Fleet Week.
That's correct.
Yeah.
We open up to the public. It's a windshield tour. We put you on a bus, and we'll take you down to the waterfront. We'll let you see all the ships, the carriers, submarines. We'll take you to the air side. We'll show you the Jamestown Exposition homes that were here from 1907. Pretty a lot of history on the base.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating place to visit.
What's your biggest challenge?
I will tell you, one of the, to dovetail with what we experienced in the area, probably transportation is one of the biggest, and I would say that's probably only edged out a little bit by security. All so right.
How many people are we talking about on the base? Because you're not going to always have 56 ships here at the same time.
65,000 people. And
but who's counting?
Exactly. That's how many live and work, approximately 45,000 sailors, and then the civilians that support. So any given day, you can have about 45,000 people on a heavy day of port loading that will come into the base.
Well, the logistics of just supply
are
daunting,
mm-hmm.
right? What you've got to do to maintain everything to be on time and ready for your fleet deployment on every ship.
That's right. That's right. The logistics piece of this huge logistics arm, for instance, we run the largest air mobility command terminal that the Navy operates. So the
old C-141s are now the C-117s?
Yeah, and we'll accommodate FedEx, we'll accommodate UPS jets as well to come in. So the logistics arms and deploying sailors, Marines, soldiers, airmen around the globe, we do that from Norfolk. For instance, we supply Guantanamo Bay from here, our air terminal. All the ships that go to sea, there's a big fleet logistics hub. Huge warehouses that we have here on the installation. And so it's the logistics.
I don't want to even ask about motor pool.
That's right. Very large.
Very large.
It really is.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go.
You know, when we talk about Norfolk and its coastline on the Chesapeake Bay, another 144 miles of shoreline, if you include the lakes and the rivers and, of course, the bay. People forget there's so much history here. Yes, it's the world's largest naval base. We just talked about that. But there's water, and there's waterside. And how's that for a segue?
Yeah, I like it.
You like
I like
that?
It. Good job.
And joining me, who's the president of the Norfolk Waterside District, which is just about to happen.
Yeah.
Is Glenn Such. How are you, sir?
Good.
Explain
thanks.
Waterside.
So Waterside District is a great family fun destination. It's dining and entertainment. It's right on the water, like you said. And what we've done is...
But what was that area before?
It was dining and entertainment about 20, 25 years ago. It sat dormant for the longest of times.
Why?
I just don't think it was... anybody had the right idea and the right vision for what it should be.
So it was abandoned?
It was abandoned.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how big a place are we talking?
So it's about 135,000 square feet inside. We got about another 50,000 square feet that we activate outside as well. So it's big. It's real big.
And it's retail?
Dining and entertainment only. We stay away from the retail. We do what we do best, and we feed, eat, and entertain people. Yeah.
All right, so I have to ask stupid questions. Ready for stupid questions?
Yeah, okay. I love them. Okay. I'm usually good at stupid answers.
Let's see. You're on the water, and it's dining. Would it be seafood?
There is seafood, yes.
Lucky guess.
Yeah, there's plenty of seafood. Actually, the seafood, you know, what we do and when we come in, we don't bring in the big, super big chain style restaurants. We like to find the local things. So when we come in, we kind of do our research and our history. And
so no Arby's?
No Arby's, that's correct. Yeah, Rappahannock Oyster Company. Yeah, we have them. So there's some good seafood there in a raw bar. Stripers is a local, they're from Manio, the Outer Banks. So they're going to bring in fresh fish every single day. They got a seafood restaurant. It should be
great.
Is
that possibly the key to your survival and your success, that you're going to do just local?
Yeah, I think so. I think what we do is, you know, we make, hopefully we make people proud of their area and their region, their history, as you spoke of. It's so rich here. And we find things we like. Boy, I have a real tough job of going around to restaurant after restaurant and finding menu items that we like. We ask these people to be a part of what we see, this vision, build it.
Okay, let's talk about menu items that you like, because you want to stay authentic and genuine.
Yeah.
All right, so no chicken fingers, I hope.
Well,
come on.
There might be a chicken finger child, you know.
Okay, fine. But you know where I'm going. So
yeah.
What is it that you're going to be putting on these menus that
when people eat it, they go, wow, I'm in Norfolk.
Well, I think Rappahannock Oyster Company starts a good... A good portion of that. And then you have Star Hill Brewery, of course, and the Fudgery was an icon back in its day, about 20 years ago at Waterside. It's probably the only thing that actually came back from the original. So
that's just like making homemade fudge there?
Yeah, that's correct.
And saltwater taffy or no?
Just fudge. Just either fudge.
Like yeah. Mackinac Island.
Yeah. And so there's some great deli sandwiches. There's some great, there's a great turkey chop. There's a meatball sub that we had to have from this one gentleman. So we took his meatball.
Why?
It was just delicious at the end of the day.
He's local.
Yes. Yeah. We couldn't not have it. You know, it just makes that much sense. So what we do is all these people's names, like when it comes to desserts, it's Carolina Cupcakery. Dawn just has a great cupcake. And then the pizza that we have is Kogan's Pizza. They have three locations here in Norfolk already. Now they got a fourth coming, and it's going to be at our place.
Thin slice, or?
It's a New York style, yeah.
It's thin slice. Yeah. Okay, now we're talking.
There you
okay.
go. It's good stuff.
Is there one thing you said absolutely no to? We're not doing that?
Probably. I probably didn't have I didn't have the authority to say no to it, but yeah, we probably said no to a few things. We want to make it, you know, you can put all style different restaurants in there, and we just kind of wanted it so it had a family friendly feel. At the end of the day, it was just something for everyone. At the end of the day,
is it part of, for lack of a better term, a revitalization of the entire Norfolk area?
Oh, absolutely. I'd like to think that we're a big spoke in that wheel, but man, Norfolk's fun right now. It's really jumping.
Okay, why?
Well, I think Waterside District's a big part of it. And then you have the main Hilton opening up. And then ADP is now in town. IKEA is coming. And they got these premium outlet shops.
Meatballs.
Yeah. Swedish meatballs.
Come on.
Right? Huh? Yeah. Ours are just a little bit different. Although I like the IKEA meatball. That's funny you said
See?
That.
See?
Yeah, it's not bad.
They can't take that off the menu over there.
Yeah. You know,
I know people who go to IKEA just for the meatballs.
I'm one of them.
Really?
I absolutely am. Yeah, I'm originally from Maryland. So there's a IKEA up there, so I stop in every once in a while and grab a meatball and the egg and the cranberry sauce right there. Absolutely. Is that bad? Reminds me of my mom's. My mom used to make a good
Swedish
meatball.
Go. So you just go to, you don't even buy anything at IKEA, you just go for the meatball.
Oh, I can't put that stuff together, so no, I just get it.
I can't either.
I just get the meatballs.
Exactly. So opening May 4th?
May 4th. You know, the city's got a lot going on, so we just want to be a great neighbor at that point in time. Yeah, I got a free concert with Michael Ray on May 4th. They're having a corporate run with 2,500 people running by us, so let's be open and be ready for them. They have a wine festival that weekend. We just want to be a good neighbor, have some food ready for everybody.
There you go. Keep that going. This is Flight 372 on SWA. The flight attendants on board serving you today. Teresa in the middle, David in the back. My name is David, and I'm here to tell you that. Shortly after takeoff, first things first, there's soft drinks and coffee to quench your thirst. But if you want another kind of drink, then just holler. Alcoholic beverages will be $4. If a Monster energy drink is your plan, that'll be $3, and you get the whole can. We won't take your cash. You gotta pay with plastic. If you have a coupon, then
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
This year, Norfolk actually celebrates the 100th birthday of the largest naval base in the world. And my next guest knows a little bit about that because he was the commander of that base. In fact, a decorated Marine, naval aviator who had about 8 different assignments all over the world. And mostly anti-submarine warfare, too, before coming back to Norfolk and running this place before he retired, and then did the smart thing and decided to live here, too. His name? Rear Admiral Byron Jake Tobin, U.S. Navy, I hate to say it, retired. I got it all done?
You got it.
What makes Norfolk a special place for you, sir?
Well, I don't want to bore you with a long story, but when I joined the Navy... coming out of college, University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, one of my first assignments was here in Norfolk in the early 1960s, late 60, early 61.
Flying planes?
No, actually, I was going to nuclear weapons school, believe it or not, which was a requirement for us before I went to Bermuda.
Where there was a naval air station
Where there was a naval air station there, and we participated in the Cuban crisis at that time, flying seaplanes.
We've come a long way since.
We've come a long way. I didn't come back until 1990 when I took command of the naval base, which is really was really a regional command.
Well, between the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1990, you were everywhere.
Everywhere. Did a million things. I was head of the Mine Warfare Command. I was head of the patrol aviation on the East Coast and many, many.
Vietnam?
No, because chasing submarines wasn't one of the things
that they did over there.
We were watching, however, the submarines coming around under the ice, under the North Pole, being out at Shimya at the end of the Aleutians.
Well, I'm not trying to impress you, but I did one of the very first stories on ELF.
See,
most people don't know about ELF. And I did it out in San Clemente Island.
Okay.
Where you guys had actually done the impossible. You had gridded the ocean floor with extreme low frequency cables, because the one thing that we couldn't beat the Russians on, they could go deeper than us, they could go faster than us, but they couldn't lick their noise.
And that's correct.
And so we knew where they were. We knew where they always were.
Always.
And you know, I'm reminded of when the day that Reagan got shot on March, I think 30th or 31st, 1981, only 2 months after he was inaugurated, all hell broke loose in the Situation Room at the White House, because everybody wanted to go to like DEFCON 4 because they saw all this Russian submarine movement starting to happen. And all of a sudden, one of the Navy guys came in and said, "No, guys, it's just a shift change. We know." Yeah. But you guys knew everything.
Yes, we did. And we watched it grow in the early days. You know, the crew that stumbled across a submarine in the ocean was guaranteed enshrinement in the ASW Hall of Fame for at least 6 months, because it'd be that long before another one.
Well, I will tell you this. When I went on a classified mission on a U.S. sub, I still can't tell anybody where we went and what we did. I will tell you this, that at one point we were about 200 feet behind a Soviet sub, and based on his distinct sonar signature, the commander of my sub could tell me, A, the name of that sub, and who the commander was likely to be. That was wild.
Yes, and when the Cold War ended, although I'm not sure it really has, but when it ended, I remember one of the greatest compliments ever paid to our community was from, I think it was Soviet General Akhramayev, said to, I think it was Admiral Crow at that time, "When I want to know where my submarines are, I look to see where your P-3s are." Well, we all knew that right behind their submarine...
P-3, by the way, was a sub-chasing plane.
Yes. Yeah. Right behind their submarine, the Soviet submarine, was a U.S. submarine ready to fire if had to.
Amazing.
So it was a work we did together.
Well, we're talking too much shop here.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, this base itself has such great history.
Not just the base, but the history of naval activity on the Elizabeth River stretches from, or up to the mouth of the bay, stretches from 1607 to the present day. And it's really quite interesting, the things that were done here, not only by the Navy, but by the Army and the Marine Corps during World War I, World War II, and of course, before that, the Civil War and others. There's so much to see.
And is that what keeps you here?
It's one of the things that keeps me here. I was very happy to come back here after I left Japan and retire. And I came back here because I was stationed here before.
You knew it.
And I know.
And you loved it.
We loved it.
Rear Admiral Byron Jake Tobin, United States Navy retired. I'm not going to call you retired. You never retire.
This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
Every time I go to a new city, maybe not a new city for you or a new city for me, but just a different city, I always try to visit at least one museum, never more than one, because otherwise my eyes glaze over. And I'm always surprised at the placement and location of certain museums, which may or may not reflect the community to begin with, but they're there anyway. And they're great surprises. And such is the case with the Chrysler Museum of Art right here in Norfolk. And joining us is the chief curator, Lloyd DeWitt. How are you, sir?
Very well. Glad to be here.
Now, you heard my introduction, because most people would never think, Norfolk, Chrysler, what?
Exactly. And we don't have any cars, and that might disappoint some people. There is another Chrysler Museum with cars, but that's far away. But we have this enormous art collection in... You're right, it's a kind of an unexpected place, but Walter Chrysler's bride was from Norfolk, and this is where they retired. He lived...
So the art followed them.
The art followed him, and it was his life's work. He wasn't involved with the car company. He collected art and built this wonderful public art collection and moved it from Rhode Island to Norfolk in 1971. The city fathers put the... made a huge argument to get the collection here, and it's been
a star attraction. They wanted it.
They wanted it, exactly. And they really saw that it was part of the renovation of the city and to really put us on the map. And since then, it's been the star attraction, this kind of sleeper that is close to the beach. And is full
I
of
believe
great
that every
treasures.
Museum should be close to the beach.
It makes it very convenient. But now we've got great restaurants and culture in town to boot. So it makes it all the more attractive to visit the Chrysler. We're just nestled there on the Hague, on the water. Beautiful building, newly renovated, 60 galleries full of the world's art treasures, from mummies all the way to Jackson Pollock and Mark Rothko. I mean, we've got it all.
But let's go back to his original collection.
Yes.
His original collection didn't just have that.
No, he started off with about 600 Picasso paintings, and over the years, he would go and visit his dealer friends, and he would trade them for...
I'll give you one Picasso for three mummies?
It probably went exactly like that. Or a Veronese, or a Guido Reni, or a Rubens, or, you know, a Bierstadt.
So he wasn't particular to any one kind of art?
Or anyone's school of art? He had a goal in mind. He wanted to create this public art museum. Yeah. So he wanted an encyclopedic collection. So it's eclectic. It's not really eclectic. It's encyclopedic. It's like the Met. It wants to have great art from every period. And so he often has one great work.
So Egyptian and American colonial.
All the major artists. So even Monet, Gauguin, Rodin.
Really?
You know, and one great example by each of those. It's really meant to inspire and educate the public. He really wanted it to be a public institution. So I think that's what makes it stand apart.
Now, when you think of Norfolk right here on the bay, you've got a great coastline.
Yeah.
There's great naval history here.
Yes, yeah.
Is that reflected in the museum as well?
We, unfortunately, have almost no ship paintings. I borrowed one from a lot.
But you're close to the beach.
Exactly. But we do, I think it's something in the next coming years, we do want to focus on that. We've got some shows coming up this summer, Thomas Hart Benton and the Navy to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Navy base here.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, exactly. And a famous American artist focusing on the Navy and some prints. And we've got some McClure local photographer looking at shipyard workers' portraits to celebrate the men and women who are hard at work every day here in this, what I like to think of as the business end of Virginia. So.
Well, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Exactly.
When you think about the history of the museum and now that the encyclopedic collection that you have, and you say it's a star attraction, is there a star attraction within the star attraction? Is there one thing that people have to see when they're at the museum?
I would say there's at least five, but and it depends on your taste. The Gauguin is one of the world's greatest Gauguin paintings. The Bierstadt is just monumental. And the glass collection is really unusual because it's so focused on art. Glass is art. So there's all these. He didn't put all his eggs in one basket. You really get a sense. And he collected by his own taste. So our Motherwell painting.
He didn't put all his Fabergé eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
Are there any Fabergé eggs?
No Fabergé eggs. But if you want to give us one, you know, anyone's out there.
Oh, you're open for donations?
We are certainly open for donations.
Lloyd DeWitt, the chief curator for the Chrysler Museum of Art right here in Norfolk, Virginia.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
But I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more.
interest of full disclosure, when I first came to Norfolk many years ago, the definition of sautéed was extremely deep fried. All right, everything was deep fried. Everywhere I went was deep fried. Luckily and thankfully, times have changed. And joining us now, somebody knows a little bit about how things got changed. A Norfolk restaurateur who's got a few little places, one of which is an institution already. John Porter, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you, Peter?
You heard my introduction.
I did. There are still some Friars in Norfolk. However, we've come a long way since then.
Well, I'm not just talking about the Friars. I'm just talking about the style of food and the service of food and the delivery of it and the choice.
Absolutely. So we have had a veritable explosion here as of recent. There are a lot of new experiments going on that are quite fun to participate in. We've been thankful enough to be involved in some of that. And it really is fun to participate.
Now, when I say one of your restaurants has become an institution, everybody tells me about the biscuit.
That's right.
Tell me about the biscuit.
So it's Southern food at its finest. We've sort of re-engineered some pieces of it, but they're sweet potato biscuit sandwiches. And everything from fried chicken, back to your fryer.
Okay, I'll give you that one. Go ahead. We have grits?
We have grits at another one of our locations, not Handsome Biscuit, but it's a nice, concise menu. We have pulled pork, frittatas, you name it. We put it on a biscuit sandwich, and it's great.
And it's the same biscuit. It's a sweet potato biscuit.
You got it.
That's the only biscuit you got.
That's the only one.
Wow. No, it doesn't come in any other flavors, no other styles.
Just one.
Okay. Mac and cheese?
No mac and cheese.
And how long has it been open?
Since February 2013.
All right. And then I love that you have names that just say what they are. Toast.
Yes. Toast is underpinned by the making of two in-house loaf breads. One is a rustic wheat, and the other is a brioche with just a touch of sweetness.
And we're talking sweet potato biscuits again?
Nope. At Toast, we have the bread runs the program. We do also there have the grits and a vegetarian chili.
A vegetarian chili, wow.
You wouldn't know it doesn't have meat in it.
You would never know.
You would never know.
Well, listen, with enough spice, you wouldn't know anything.
That's right.
That's the secret, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, done. Okay. But how has the scene changed so dramatically and why?
You know, I think there are a few reasons. There's an interest in exploration, I think, and becoming disjointed from the idea that, tweezer food always has to be the pinnacle of cuisine. I think we've transitioned to more experience-based and social sort of connection around culture. So, I think the experience is running things in a more relaxed manner.
And with such a big population being U.S. Navy here, right, they're not just doing ribs and mashed potatoes.
That's right. With all the Navy folks here, there's a constant supply of new people to kind of try out what we've done. We get a lot of chances to experiment. And really, they come with, broad experience from all around the world, different flavors, different things that they've experienced. And so interesting lot.
Well, you talk about experimenting. I ask this of every restaurateur I can, so you're no exception. What's the one thing you put on your menu that you thought, man, everybody's going to love this, and it tanked? And then what's the one thing that you put on your menu saying, who's going to order this and they can't get enough of it?
Great question. Both of those come at Handsome Biscuit. The first, we actually did a version of a shrimp and grits biscuit. It was just as a special. It really, I thought, was going to do very, very well. It was kind of a more of a polenta cake of sorts.
Did it have a name?
It did, and I don't remember it.
It was memorable that you don't remember it.
It was something crafty, I'm sure. However, I don't remember it. And for multiple reasons, I certainly enjoyed it, but for multiple reasons, people didn't really connect with it. But
so that is no longer on the menu.
That's no longer on the menu. Okay. It was a short run.
It was
weeks.
86, like right. You couldn't believe.
That's
it.
Right. That's okay. Right. So the other one is our Hella Fitzgerald. It really, we put it on the menu. We thought, hey, this is going to be one of the
Hella Fitzgerald.
You got it. So it's
and what is it?
It's a chicken thigh fried.
Does it do scat singing too?
No. It's got sausage red eye gravy, a bit of cheddar, and some bacon on it on that sweet potato biscuit. And it was really put there to be sort of all attractive. And I guess that's what it did. We just didn't expect it to be such a runaway hit.
And no calories whatsoever.
No, the calories are very low.
No
fat. Yeah, it's all zero.
Zero. Mm-hmm. It's just
that's right.
Get a stretcher.
Right.
Now, other than your restaurants, Toast and Handsome Biscuit, you have Field Guide too. Where do you hang out that's not one of your restaurants that is a local dive or a place that's not in the brochure, not in the guidebook that you absolutely would take me to?
Sure. I love Le Grand. It's a little place on North Collie. A lot of inventive food. It's a small place run by a a smart young gentleman, and then another place out in Virginia Beach called Stockpot.
And what's in that?
It was built around soup, but they've sort of broadened into different things, all sorts of great, healthy home cooking.
Cool.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.